afternoon, or good evening, wherever you happen to be in the world. And welcome to Information Week Live for the week of August 2nd. I'm your host, Information Week Executive Editor Dave Wagner. I'm pinch hitting for Kurt Franklin this week. Kurt is in New York making a last-second pitch to replace Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. But even though we're missing Kurt, we should have a great show today. Joining me today is Jim Connolly. Jim is editor-in-chief of iWeek's sister site, All Analytics. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday to you too, Jim. Thanks. Also joining me is iWeek contributor Larry Loeb, our tap dancing freelancer, who also knows quite a lot about IT. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Yeah, sure. Welcome. So, Jim, I'm going to start with you, if you don't mind. I'm not sure if all of our audience is familiar with All Analytics, so what I'd love you to do is have you tell them a little bit about All Analytics, where to find it, and why don't you start telling us one of the hot stories over there this week.
Sure. Certainly, Dave. All Analytics is a four-year-old site, part of the UBM family, and our focus is very obviously on big data, analytics, what the analytics pros do for a living. And much of what we do is to look at the issues and challenges that the analytics teams in enterprise organizations face. And, you know, we have blogs that appear on a daily basis. The site is allanalytics.com. And we welcome the iWeek audience. We had a couple of very hot stories. One is actually one of our slideshows. It's been proved very popular this week. It's titled "What IoT Is and What IoT Ain't," and it's a follow on our recent All Analytics Academy program, where we looked at the Internet of Things and we had expert presenters going through the real world of IoT, offering advice to the analytics audience, and it was very successful, and it's been a the slideshow has been a real hot product this week, getting a lot of attention, and we're thrilled. We're pitching it as this is our opportunity to put the IoT in perspective and how it's being used in the real world.
Right. I think IoT is one of those words that everybody feels like they know what it means. But if we put all of those definitions down in a list, we'd find out everybody has a very different idea of what it actually is. When you said the slideshow said what it is and what it ain't, can you give me a couple of examples of what it ain't? I think one of the ways sometimes to define something is by defining its borders.
Well, for starters, what it ain't is it ain't being done by everybody. A lot of companies are just the idea. Some companies are way down the road. If you look at, for instance, a John Deere or a General Electric, they're doing a lot with the IoT. A lot of people also think that it's strictly about the smart home, which is really just a very small part of it, at least in terms of our focus. We're looking at the enterprise. Now, down the road, there's going to be a connection between the smart home and the enterprise. As utility companies, for instance, get to know how you're using energy, and if you're sending energy back into the grid, it'll be things like, understanding what you're doing, how your car is running, how your refrigerator is running. You can't look at the IoT and just say, well, it's going to text me when I have to stop for milk and lay home, right? That's not the IoT. IoT really is companies with thousands of machines out there. They could be coffee makers. They could be, heavy earth movers. And you want to optimize how those are being used. And that's where analytics kick in. Enterprises are looking at all this data that's being fed back, and you're making decisions on things like maintenance and efficiency.
Right. Well, I can't wait until the IoT calls me and asks me if my refrigerator is running. I think that will change a very classic gag.
You know, the old joke is, you better catch it.
So Larry, let me turn to you a little bit here. You're our resident skeptic, I think it's fair to say. You have...
Who? Me?
I think you have a pretty good BS detector. What do you think about the IoT? Real? You know, what is it? What is it ain't? You know, what do you think about the real potential of IoT? We hear it's a multi-trillion-dollar industry that's just around the corner, and yet I've been hearing that for years, and it's still not here.
The hardware that needs to implement that isn't there yet. There's Nest and a few other in-home things that are definitely there, but that's not everything. Cisco, for example, would really like it to be there because they will sell more switches to people trying to get information. I do think that it's evolving, and it's evolving because people have to figure out what it really means. The point of IoT is not just to be able to predict when you've got to send a serviceman to fix your refrigerator. It's also to make sure that some dweeb can't get to your refrigerator, shut it off, and have fun with it. Security is one aspect of the whole thing that really has not been addressed.
Right. That's a real issue. You don't want somebody to hack into your refrigerator and also ask you if you have Prince Albert in a can. So, Jim, what do you think about this? I think one of the hardest things to figure out is when the IoT is even here. How do we know? Maybe that's a dumb question. Maybe it's a small growth kind of thing. But I just feel like we keep discussing it as something that's happening or going to happen, but it's not happening.
First misimpression out there is people think that the Internet of Things is a thing. It isn't. It's a set of concepts and core technologies that you can utilize. It's not like the web that everybody has access to. You're going to use, you know, IoT technology in your own way as an enterprise. You might use it, but you're down the road within your home. But, you know, in a way, we almost have to take the home out of it right now. And really think, I mean, a lot of what's going on in the enterprise now is they're internet enabling what used to be strictly be done in using what was called M2M, machine-to-machine networking, which was hardwired networking, kind of limited in capability, but, you know, could get the job done if a machine on the factory floor was starting to show some hiccups. You know, it could send a note out to a maintenance tech to, you know, come fix me. So that's at the core level, but you're also seeing a lot of things happening, for instance, in agriculture, which, you know, we touched on in our academy. Internet of Things is identifying, it's optimizing the types of seeds that someone like Monsanto can sell. It is John Deere optimizing where tractors go, you know, reading sensors, knowing where farmers need to put water. So, I mean, it's not in broad use right now with, you know, hundreds of applications and thousands of companies, but it's getting there, and you're starting to see how it can work.
Right. Do you agree with Larry that security is holding it back? You know, we just recently saw that story get huge traction about somebody hacking a Jeep so that they couldn't even drive. I guess I'm just as worried if somebody hacks my tractor or my my GMO that Monsanto makes. Do you think that's the major holdup with IoT?
I think finding the opportunity is the bigger holdup. I think the key with security, and think about it, it's in this case, don't think of security as the only challenge. Think of it as an opportunity. How often do you get to build out totally new applications and build in security from the ground up? So if companies start doing that, think how different that's going to be. If this isn't like adding patches to Windows. You know, if you use secure hardware and secure communications right from the start and eliminate the vulnerabilities, you know what? It can enable these applications. But if you don't do it right, you know, you're opening a lot of doors.
Right. Well, I like that. I like that attitude. I think that actually is a very nice sentiment to move on to. There was a story on All Analytics today that caught my eye, and it was actually about self-service business intelligence. And I have to say, I've been in the big data world for a long time, and one of my biggest fears with data is how people who aren't equipped to use it, use it. So it kind of raised an alarm for me a little bit about the idea of self-service BI. Can you tell me a little bit about that story and your viewpoint about self-service BI?
One of our freelancers, Jim Schockenbach, wrote this one. And, you know, I think he's got a good point that you don't need the core centralized analytics team running every report. You don't need them doing every query on behalf of people out in the field. We already have opened the door to letting people see data through things like dashboards. So if you give reasonably well-trained end users, management level, for instance, some core tools, they can do their own queries, they can do their own reports, and they can expand their view a little bit. You don't want to open the floodgates and let all the data go out to people who are untrained. Similarly, this doesn't eliminate need for an analytics team, because those are the people who have to build out the core application, build out the interfaces, and set, the standards in terms of securing data, protecting consumer privacy. To steal the phrase, you're opening the kimono a little bit.
Right. Well, Larry, it sounds to me a little bit like handing a loaded gun to a child and telling them to go play. Are you just as skeptical as I am, or am I wrong on this one?
Well, there's sort of a different model here that occurs to me. I don't know if you're familiar with the term Google hacking. Basically, you would put into Google some sort of address statement that was, for instance, used by most remote camera manufacturers. By putting that URL in, you could bypass the entire security associated with that camera and bring the image right up in Google. That sort of wide area access to data has not, to my understanding, really been addressed. I think that someone somewhere will figure out how to do a Google hack on IoT devices. And when it does happen, it will probably be very simple. The TV camera guys thought that putting a front end on their camera would stop somebody from accessing it. No, somebody went around it. And that's been a trend that has gone on for the longest time. Phone hacking, for instance. There were all sorts of safeguards that were built into it until John Draper figured out that 2600 cycles would cause the phone system to reset itself. That's, I think, a lot of the kind of problem we're going to be encountering as we go to do this.
I'm sorry, Larry. I kind of lost you there. How does that, I see how that applies to our previous discussion about Internet of Things. I'm not sure how it applies to self-service BI. Maybe I just lost you there. What? How does that kind of hacking danger apply to giving data to managers, to make decisions on their own?
Because when they don't understand how to truly access the data in a safe way, they may come up with a way to get around the safeguards that have been put into place. Maybe instead of using the dashboard of your CRM software, they just try and get it with an Excel spreadsheet, something like that. It's a convoluted example I gave, but
So what you're worried about is that if we're not handing managers data in the way they want to see it, they're going to go do something radical to see it the way they want to see it. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, yes. I think that the shadow IT problem that was written about just this week is a very, very important part of this. People don't see it, or most people don't see it as a hacking effort. They're simply trying to get something that someone's not giving them.
Right. Well, let me ask you then, Jim. This seems like an effort to stop shadow IT, right? It seems to me like we're saying, hey, if we give this to them, they're going to stop looking for it another way. Is that a part of this, or is it really just a way to make data live?
I read it more as coexistence as opposed to putting a stop to it. Central IT has to accept shadow IT is out there. So let's do it right. And, if you have untrained users, then if you trust them, train them. They don't get training with shadow IT. They just go on their own. And in most cases, department-level users have access to a lot of this data anyway. What they don't have access to are the analytics tools. And that's what our writer here, Jim Schockenbach, was touching on. Give them the tools to do the analysis themselves, and set the structures, infrastructure in place to protect the data, and apply best practices from a security standpoint as well as from an analytics standpoint, which can be tricky.
Right. Well, my biggest fear of it is that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. How do we need to restructure our business so that the people who are using this self-service data are using it the right way? I mean, we pay these analytics people a lot of money to make sure we understand regressions and data sets and small sample sizes and a lot of things that the average person doesn't get in high school or college math anymore. How do we make sure that we build an enterprise to handle self-service BI?
Those are the people who build it. You're not paying these people to run reports. You're paying these people to develop applications. And in this case, we're saying develop applications that can be used by professional level, management level business users.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, Larry, I'm going to turn to you, if you don't mind. You've got several very interesting articles this week. And I noticed...
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Good. Well, I'm glad you did. It's a sad life when you're writing stories that aren't interesting to yourself. you wrote two stories that, in many ways, I thought were connected. One was on an exploit in the Mac OS, and one was on yet another problem with Flash. Steve Jobs famously didn't like Flash because it wasn't very secure, but here we find out the thing that Steve Jobs likes isn't very secure either. Are we at the point where there's just no such thing as a safe operating system, or do you think there's still better choices than others?
Let me go in inverse order on that.
Sure.
One of the reasons I wrote about the OS X vulnerability was because all that I had seen about it really didn't say how it happened. And me being the geek that I am, it's not good unless I see how it happened. That's what I wanted to answer with this particular article. And I think that basically I did. The reason it happened is somebody in Apple made a stupid programming choice. They bypassed the error checking that was built into OS X and just hard-coded something into the main execution loops. That was a pretty dumb move. But it'll be fixed. I mean, Apple's not talking publicly, but it seems that it got fixed in the latest developer release of the next version of OS X. Not the full upgrade El Capitan, but the maintenance release that should come out rather soon. That's one kind of error. That's going to happen all the time. The problem with what's going on with the malvertisements over at Yahoo is a structural one. I made the argument in another article that I wrote that it's time to pull Flash entirely. There are ways to get around it with extensions to your browsers. Flash was an answer at a time when there weren't very many good answers about personal computing and the internet. Yes, it did a lot of things. And it enabled people on the web to see all sorts of flashy, geeky animations and visuals. But it's time to move on. Do differently. Kill Flash.
Well, I think
that's
sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the Kill Flash movement is really starting to gain a lot of momentum. Is that like a legitimate alternative right now? Like if today a genie waved a magic wand and destroyed Flash from existence, how quickly could we replace it? How quickly could we genuinely change all of the various enterprise apps and the even something as simple as, you know, the way our websites are constructed to sell and to market and advertise? How quickly could we replace it?
I think that it could be done a lot faster than people realize because it would require HTML5 to be implemented in the website code. One of the problems with websites these days is that resources are not being devoted to it because everybody wants to be mobile, get their mobile platform working, and that's valid. But if a development effort was made to these websites to utilize HTML5's capabilities, yes, I think it could be done fairly rapidly.
Are we talking months, weeks, years? I mean, I'm thinking about how so many enterprises are still using XP, you know? What's the realistic, you know, point of view on that?
As I said, it's going to require enterprises to be not only devoted to getting rid of Flash, but if they fear a liability in using Flash. Let's say somebody starts a class action suit that says, I got hosed because of Flash and these people use it. They cause me problems. That would be a great motivator to recode, don't you think?
Yes, except we see a lot of other vulnerabilities not really addressed either. But I'm going to turn to Jim here. Jim, I have a question that maybe you don't know the answer to either, because I honestly don't know if it's a question that's ever been addressed in the data community. But how much is Flash being used by the analytics community, maybe for data visualization or anything like that? Is Flash a vulnerability to the analytics and data community at all?
I'm not sure. I'd be guessing, but most of the visualization tools for more complex visualizations probably are built from the ground up with dedicated applications. It's not a simple, they're not going to use a simple plugin in most cases, I suspect. But I'd be guessing there. The only thing I know about Flash is that it only crashes when I need it most.
I feel like it only crashes every 3 seconds. okay, well, that's fair enough. My experience matches that the analytics community is not majorly using Flash at this point. So thankfully, they're ahead of the curve on this particular thing. Larry, I want to turn to another story I believe you wrote this week because, for the last few weeks, it's been almost a rule that says that we have to mention Microsoft at least once in the course of Information Week Live. I think you wrote a story about HoloLens going to developers.
Yes.
Tell me why that's an important step for Microsoft.
It's an important step because the hooks to make HoloLens work are hiding inside of Windows 10. For the they've taken it from a prototype kind of device, which is okay. Everybody has to start somewhere. And they're telling developers, better get ready because we're going to have hardware soon. Soon in this case being in 2016. I kind of like the HoloLens idea because it has a number of, to me, technical advantages over, say, Google Glass, which in many ways is the same sort of augmented reality device. I think that once the capabilities of this are going to be used in the right way, which means that HoloLens would hopefully have some mechanism for image analysis, and based on image analysis, give you the information you want, that would be wonderful. It's not going to happen for consumers all that fast, I think. The device itself is going to be way too pricey for a casual user. It's too complex. The onboard processing to make it work is the equivalent of a laptop. And there's a number of other technical issues which I think have to be addressed before the price can come down. It's going to have spatial sound, for instance, so you get sound cues as well as visual cues. But if you could say, for example, look at something, some mechanic of yours just has to look at a part and all the annotations that are needed to deal with that part are presented to him, that's terrifically productivity boosting.
Right, and I agree with you. But here's an interesting thing, which is that in my mind, Microsoft has really pushed this as an alternative to Oculus Rift. And they've specifically shown it as something to play Minecraft on. They seem to be pushing it as a consumer device. You, very interestingly, instead compared it to Google Glass, which started as a consumer device, but Google is now rebranding it very much as an augmented reality corporate enterprise tool. Why do you, other than I heard the expense, which I think makes perfect sense, why do you see that so much differently than Microsoft? What are they missing?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
Microsoft is positioning this very much as a consumer device, and I think you positioned it very, very eloquently as an enterprise device. Why?
A Minecraft demo to me is not something that positions it as a consumer device. They simply had the code and they were showing off what you could do with it.
Okay, fair
enough. There's also something to think about in that VR versus AR usage. With a VR headset, you had better be sitting down and physically stable.
Yeah.
Because you're losing all the environmental cues you get from what you're doing and are far more likely to walk into a wall. AR, on the other hand, is inherently mobile. The device specs that Microsoft has published indicate it is a mobile device. There's no USB cord running from it to your computer or something like that. So if it is mobile and you can get outside in the real world and use it, that's the differentiator to me.
Right. Makes sense to me. So, Jim, let me turn back to you then. Has there been a lot of excitement about the potential of HoloLens or virtual reality or augmented reality as a new way of presenting data inside the data community? Is anybody really excited over there about that?
I don't know if it's excited. I'd probably call it interested. I mean, there are a lot of possibilities that come down the road. You know, if you could more closely interact with the visualization. And I think that's, you know, that opens some doors. If it allowed you, for instance, to, you know, move a data file and run, you know, rerun your analysis and do that as in a graphical, surround type of way. Or if you were to move, let's say you're doing traffic management and you want to see what happens if I move, you know, a vehicle over, you know, to the right onto an alternative route. There are some possibilities. You know, does it have to be in a surround type environment? Possibly. But right now, I think it's people are poking at it a little bit as opposed to doing much serious work with it.
Right. Now, see, I'm
well, nobody has one to work with yet.
Right, exactly. I'm excited
but
about
I'm not talking about point. I'm not talking about HoloLens itself, but in terms of other VR, AR type environments.
Oh, sorry.
You know, there's interest, but probably no activity.
Fair enough. I'm excited about HoloLens specifically from a data point of view because I think once the reality catches up to the demo, it's the closest thing to, you know, Iron Man's Jarvis we're going to have, where we're going to be able to manipulate our data with our hands in a three-dimensional environment. And it came up because we recently had a radio show with the designer of the Jarvis UI, John Underkoffler. If you haven't checked that out, check out our radio archive because I thought it was a really fascinating radio show.
You've been watching the Avengers again, haven't you, David?
I've been watching the Avengers again, yes. But John Underkoffler made a really great point, which is that we have a really great device for interacting and collaborating as people. We call it a whiteboard or we call it a wall. We call it a room. And what happens in the average meeting in an enterprise these days is that somebody throws something up on the wall with a projector, and everybody looks at that wall, and they don't move, they don't get around, they don't manipulate data. It's just a projection on a wall. So to me, the real value of augmented reality, whether it's HoloLens or Google Glass or somebody else, is the opportunity to physically manipulate and move around inside data again, like we used to do when the whiteboard or the chalkboard was the only thing we had. So personally, I think the analytics community should be really excited about it. So maybe, Jim, since you know I occasionally drop an article over on A2, maybe I'll drop an article on that today. Unfortunately, sorry, go ahead, Jim.
I just say that would be great. You know,
great. Well, good. Unfortunately, we're out of time because I talked our way through the ending of the show. So I apologize, gentlemen, for talking over your time. Before I go, though, we always make sure that everybody knows how to get in touch with you guys. So, Jim, if anybody wants to see your work or follow you on Twitter or any of those things, where is it that they can find you?
On Twitter, we're simply at All Analytics. My personal Twitter is Jim Con, J-I-M-C-O-N, and most of my blogs go up there, and they all go up automatically on All Analytics.
Great. And where and what can we look forward to in All Analytics coming up this week? Do you have any idea yet?
Looking at education and the role of analytics in changing the way both elementary and more advanced education is being done and should be done. So big subject area.
Sounds good. Well, thank you for joining us today, Jim.
You're welcome.
And Larry, where can people find you on the internet and find all of your great work?
Oh, all of my great works. My Twitter handle is at Larry Loeb. Pretty much anything that I'm doing on Information Week is plumped on there. So that's probably the single most active channel I use.
Great. And what can we expect from you on Information Week coming up next week?
Let's see. IBM just plunked down $1 billion for a site that will teach Watson how to see. They're going to get into the business of combining associated health records with digital imaging for like radiologists, so that anything, they're going to broaden the perspective that who's ever looking at an image has by making suggestions on what they're doing. That falls in with, I think that's a trend, by the way, that IBM is going to be continuing with in the future. They are making a major push to get healthcare and their Watson computing engine very intimately involved.
Sounds great. Well, I'm really looking forward to that. Thank you for being here today, Larry.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Great. Well, with that, it's just time to tell you, you can find me at GeekendDave on Twitter. That's weekend, but with a G. Online now, you can find my Geekend, which is about space elevators, which I think are an extremely cool idea. I also would like you to check out an article we have asking you to tell your 6-word IT story. It's a great way to talk about the kinds of things you deal with every day without investing huge amounts of time, and they're funny, they're interesting. I hope you will read the ones that are already there, and I hope you will add yours to it. With that, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for indulging me while Kurt is out trying to steal Trevor Noah's job at The Daily Show. We couldn't and we wouldn't do this without you. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.